But I again return to this question of the U.S. agenda for not just for Israel-Palestine, but for the region. Kerry and Obama have put a lot of energy into this idea that they were going to work overtime to solve the conflict with the Palestinians. But in fact, what they've actually done is used Israel and Palestine as an issue to further their agenda, not only in Syria, but also elsewhere in the region. And I think that this regional context is something that is sadly left out of this narrative all too often. If you look at the situation of the Palestinians today and you look at their isolation from traditional allies in Syria, in many ways isolation from other allies, and they've moved closer because of Hamas's position to other players in the region, which are very much in line with NATO's policy. So I think the politics here is what is getting very complicated, and unfortunately it's being left out of the narrative, and those who will pay the price for that ignorance of the world public, I think, are the Palestinian people. The world is rising up to reject what Israel is doing. This is a given. And as the previous speaker mentioned, the narrative, at least in the mainstream media, is somewhat, if only slightly, changing in our favor here. But what is not changing is the recognition of what Palestinian people need in order for their liberation and their self-determination. And that is regional resistance, regional cooperation, one that is able to stand against the imperial system that is challenging their right to exist.
And looking at the narrative that we're hearing from a lot of the Western media, I'd like to put this question to Ms. Mustafa. Ms. Mustafa, you know, we're hearing a lot, at least from the Israeli side of the conflict, saying that Hamas is responsible for what's happening now and is responsible for a lack of a ceasefire. They say it was Hamas who rejected the ceasefire. It's Hamas which is using Palestinians as human shields. And I'd just like to have your view on the role of Hamas here, because we just heard Ismail Haniyeh speaking, and he was saying that Hamas is being supported thoroughly by the Palestinians, who say, even those, he said, who've lost family members, saying that this resistance should continue. Why do you think Hamas initially did not agree, basically, with that ceasefire proposal? And what path do you think is it now facing?
Hamas were very honest in the reasons why they rejected the ceasefire. First of all, they weren't remotely consulted. They heard about it from the press. So there was no discussion, even though they are very much victims of the Israeli onslaught. So it just seemed a bit bizarre to be faced with take it or leave it proposal in which they played no role. So on the one hand, that's the reason why they opposed it. But obviously, it also means that here once again, the Israelis will come back, pound Gaza every other year, maybe 2 years, just to keep the population of Gaza in its place, remind the Palestinians who's in charge, and then come back and do it once again. There needs to be something's got to give, basically. After all this bloodshed, after all this destruction, I think what Hamas are trying to say was that we need to get something out of this, which is a lifting of the siege. Now, of course, the sad thing about Hamas is that regardless what they do, they're in a lose-lose situation. They retaliate, they get an even greater attack. They do nothing. They're accused of apathy and of failing the Palestinian cause. So really, Hamas are cornered right now, and they're in a very difficult position. Now, it's fair to say that despite the sensitive moment, we do have to recognize that Hamas has made some strategic and political mistakes in the past, especially in the immediate aftermath of what we call the Arab Spring. But I think what we now need to know and we now need to recognize is that the entire region is rallying behind what Hamas is doing purely because it's in defense of the Palestinian cause. Hamas is just the front now, but what we need to see is that this is what Gaza has, it's Hamas, and this is what we need to deal with. But first and foremost, we need to support the Palestinian people who are currently the victims of this Israeli aggression.
Right, now that brings me to the next question, Eric Graetz, if I may. We're hearing right now in the breaking news, Qassam Brigades, the military wing of Hamas, saying 10 Israeli soldiers have been killed in an ambush near Shuja'iyah district. Earlier, Hamas was saying that according to our estimates, at least 40 Israeli soldiers have been killed. Israel confirming that 20 have actually been killed. And this all started after the ground incursion, of course, and we know that an Israeli soldier has also been captured. Do you think that Israel, as some analysts analysts were telling us earlier, this shows that it is nearing defeat in its battle with Hamas in the Gaza Strip, because after the bombardments, it entered into the ground incursion, and since then it's facing more casualties. Can it continue with this trend, especially if we consider the fact that more of its soldiers may even be captured or killed?
Well, to be blunt, I somewhat reject the notion of victory and defeat either for the Israeli forces or for the Palestinian side, because really what we're seeing here is a conflict, an aggression by Israel that has no strategic objective. They're not trying to necessarily change the situation from what it has been. They don't have clear and specific military goals. Their goals are pretty simple. It is to collectively punish the Palestinian people, create as many refugees as they can, and utterly create so chaos in Gaza generally. And so to say that Israel would be defeated in this, I think, is somewhat of an illusory concept. What I do think is relevant, though, is that the punishment that is inflicted on the Israeli forces will have a political backlash inside of Israel. Now, I'm not an expert on Israeli internal politics, and I wouldn't pontificate on the subject, but from my understanding, there are forces inside of Israel, and more growing every day, who are utterly discontented with the extreme right-wing reactionary nature of mainstream Israeli politics, particularly in the era of Netanyahu. And if this conflict or if this episode can bring about a sea change in Israeli politics, that would of course be significantly beneficial to the Palestinians and to those of us around the world interested in their cause. And I would also like to return to what the previous speaker mentioned, because I think it is absolutely essential to recall that the strategic mistakes, whatever strategic mistakes Hamas has made in the past, those can be still corrected. There are still avenues for Hamas and for the Palestinian people to reintegrate themselves into a larger regional resistance. But again, this comes back to the question of what are Hamas's and the Palestinian people by extension relation to diametrically opposed forces in the region. On the one hand, you have a Qatar-Turkey alliance, which is very close to the NATO agenda. On the other hand, you have Iran and Syria and some other players in the region who have stood in opposition to that and who have traditionally been the supporters of the Palestinian people and of the resistance. And so the question then before Hamas is not so much whether their resistance is legitimate. Of course it's legitimate. I don't think any serious political observer could say that resistance against Israeli colonialism is anything but legitimate. But the question is, will it be successful? And in order for it to be successful, it has to have a regional component to it. And those of us interested in supporting the Palestinian people from now until the moment of their liberation have to recognize that point.
And just before we run out of time, I'd like to again go back to our main issue and the problem right now, the crisis right now in Gaza. Ms. Mustafa, if I may, do you also agree with Mr. Draetzer that there is no strategic objective for Israel here, that it's just trying to continue with the collective punishment of Gaza?
Absolutely. And to a certain extent, whatever Hamas does, and the sheer existence of Hamas is a godsend for Israel, because it allows it to use it as an excuse to continuously attack Gaza and actually, you know, exterminate gradually the Palestinian population, force it into exile, humiliate it, and just ensure that they remain the boss. So whatever Hamas does, it's almost, whether it does nothing, it serves Israel. Whether it does something, it seems to serve Israel. But can I just reiterate that at this moment in time, I think there needs to be more of a coherent politics coming out from the Palestinian side. And I mean by that both from Fatah and Hamas. What has been destabilizing for all the strategic partners of the Palestinian cause is to see that even within the Palestinian movements, there is no coherent politics. And it's very difficult for the partners to actually adopt a policy that would be in line with Palestinian interests, given that even the Palestinians themselves are not actually explaining where they want to go. Do they want to rip up the Oslo agreement? Do they want to go on with negotiations? We need to have something clear coming out from the Palestinian side, and then make sure that all the allies ally themselves with Palestinian interests.
Well, thank you very much. I'm afraid I've got to stop it there. Thank you to our guests in London, Ms. Hafsa Akhara Mostafa, journalist and Middle East expert, and in New York, Mr. Eric Draitz, the founder of StopImperialism.com. Thank you so much for being with us. We will, of course, be back in just a couple of minutes with the international headlines. Actually, we'll have the top five for you. Do stay with us. Again, I'd just like to tell those of our viewers who are joining us now, 549 people who've been killed as a result of 2 weeks of Israeli attacks on Gaza from land, sea and air, up to 3,300 others who've been injured. Do stay with us.